You're listening to
Hot Garbage.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hot Garbage Podcast, your weekly music playlist. Thank you so much for joining us this evening, this afternoon, this morning, whenever you may be listening. We hope you have a good time while you're here. If you do, the only catch is that we ask you to tell a friend, a family member, a coworker, even a mortal enemy about the show. It really helps spread the word. And if you want to do that in a more formal way, you can always subscribe.
You may take their phone and you can just subscribe.
You can subscribe, but you can also leave us a comment on iTunes.
On your phone and other people's phone.
Yeah. Do it to strangers because they'll thank you for it. Just as we thank you. My name is Drew. Joining me, as always, is the helmet to my elbow pads, my dear friend Andy.
Gather around, hustlers. That's if you're still living.
Ooh, Andy. Yeah. Slick Rick.
Yeah.
Andy Slick Rick Fakes, as we always say.
That's
Jay-Z. That was Jay-Z as well.
Sometimes they call me.
You're a part of a rich legacy.
They call me that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know that, but some of my friends do call me Jay-Z.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I know most of your friends, and I don't know any that do, but I have to believe there's a few out there that probably do.
Yeah, it's weird. It doesn't really go with my name at all, but it's I'll take it.
What's the best nickname you've ever had, Andy? Have you ever been given a good nickname? Your last name is Fix. That's like that's got to have some good nicknames.
It's kind of always been Fix. For a long time as a kid, I was called Lurch. That was not a very good one. I did like
That's not a good one.
Haunted House is pretty good.
Oh, yeah, Haunted House. Yeah. That's how this show started. You were Haunted House's
That was Mr. Tomorrow.
Oh, Mr. Tomorrow. That's a good one, too. Mr. Tomorrow is my favorite nickname.
That's my other nickname. I like that one. It's probably the best.
I don't even know where that came from. It's just a made-up one. You're not very particularly futuristic.
That one was like a typo where I was like, hey, does anyone want to go shopping with me tomorrow?
With Mr. Tomorrow.
Does anyone want to go shopping with Mr. Tomorrow?
Who wants to hit the mall with Mr. Tomorrow? I've never had a nickname.
No.
I had a self-appointed one that I wanted people to call me Chocolate when I was in college, and I've sort of pushed that on people ever since then. And my girlfriend, because of that, to make fun of me, calls me Nibs, which are those like little chocolate
cocoa
pieces.
Nibs?
Yeah. So she calls me Nibs, but it's become affectionate, but she intended it as an insult. So that's probably the best nickname that I've ever had is Nibs.
Oh, nice. That's pretty good.
Yeah. You know, speaking of the best, Andy, I don't like to use the word best often, but this could be the best episode we've ever had on High Garbage.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's up there.
You know, I think that almost every week I'm in the afterglow of a great episode, but I think this is a great one. We had, from the band Stoner Control, our new best friend Charlie was on the show tonight. And this is one of those bands when you live in Portland, you realize it's a bottomless well of music that you can never get to the bottom of. And I guess that's what bottomless means.
It is. That's the definition of it.
And the Stoner Control came to me up from the depths, and I listened to them and their new album Alone in the City, which came out at the end of August, and their previous album. And I was like, damn, I was almost jealous of this band. They're like this three piece kind of power poppy rooted in like 90s alternative. They've got that kind of grungy veneer to them, but also very just digestible, really pleasing songs. And I was just like, man, what a great band that I've never heard of, and what a treat to have them in my life now. So I'm excited that we got a chance to sit down with Charlie. We talked a lot about his singular vision for the band, talked a little bit about puking, which is for you longtime listeners is a great return to form for us.
Yeah, we're back on that gross shit.
Yeah, everyone's, well, you know, the thing about puking is that it's going to happen again and again and again. So it's the gift that keeps on giving in terms of storytelling. So, if you're into some puke, if you're into some wonderful music, I think you're really going to be into this episode of Hot Garbage. So please check out Charlie and Stoner Control. You can check them out on Bandcamp to purchase their new album. They're going to be playing shows here in Portland. October 18th is the next time you can check them out at the Kenton Club here in Portland. So be sure to check out Stoner Control October 18th at the Kenton Club. It's a venue and a band that are made for each other. And I think you'll enjoy our conversation with Charlie on this week's episode of Hot Garbage.
Kiss your parents and love your mom. And wait, don't put any of this in the episode, dude. You should probably cut it off right here, Nate.
I how long have you been doing this? Because I know that the Stoner Control came about out of a kind of another project.
Yeah. So
what's
I guess,
the genesis of the band?
Yeah, we started in like March of 2016 as a side project, and I was playing in another band called Roxbury, and that kind of ended just like, you know, how things end. So then it kinda
acrimoniously.
Yeah, just like no reason really, just kind of ended. And yeah, so I started doing this like more seriously a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where does the name come from?
So the name comes from a Brazilian jiu-jitsu thing, like a move or something like that. I don't really, it's hard to explain. It's like a weird position. I don't know how much you know about Brazilian jiu-jitsu. It's like they roll around
a
the
lot.
Ground.
I mean, I don't want to call myself an expert. But
I'm a fan of the Gracie style.
Yeah, for sure. So you know at least that much.
Yeah. They fight. It's a lot of submission and grappling holds that are, a lot of them are done from your back. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is like a really weird, random position. But also there's like the Stoner Controls vans that drive around, like Stoner Electric.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you've ever seen those. There's one that
I have. I laugh every time.
Yeah, there's one that says Stoner Controls, so also kind of that, I guess.
So Stoner Control in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's like a position?
Yeah. If you like search Stoner Control, most of what comes up is like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu stuff. Like people like, I don't know, like how-to videos and stuff like that. Yeah.
Do you have any crossover from that, from your fans?
No.
Yeah, people show
so.
Up thinking that they're going to see
love
a demonstration.
That would be cool, but
oh, I thought
maybe
this was a Stoner Control demo. I've been working on my Stoner Control grip.
Not yet, but when it started, I was like really into that. I was like watching a lot of videos of just like jiu-jitsu, and I don't know.
For me, it's capoeira or nothing.
Well, yeah, that seems a lot more interesting.
It's fancy. There's a lot of movement in that. But for me, it's all Krav Maga.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that like
I love throat punching?
Where's that from again?
I think it's Israel.
Yeah, that's probably the most legit, honestly.
Yeah, that one just looks the gnarliest. Mm-hmm. It's just like, it's like not a lot of like you. Pageantry or anything. It's just like punch to the throat, disable. It's just like two move disables.
Have you guys ever been punched in the throat?
It probably
yeah,
is
it
terrible. I never have been.
It's one of the worst things that you get. It's like the worst. I would rather get kicked in the nuts than punched in the throat.
It's yeah, not like on purpose. I've been throttled in the throat though, an accident many times. I've never had anybody straight up punch me in the throat though.
I got tackled in the throat playing an unpadded tackle football when I was in like middle school or something like that. It really fucked me up.
It was like a clothesline or with the shoulder or what?
It was the shoulder, like putting the shoulder directly into my windpipe, and man.
And you couldn't breathe for 3 days?
I just like couldn't talk. Like my throat was really, really messed up. You
oh my
a
god!
Beautiful singing voice. Now it's just this.
That's why.
Just these monotone grumbles that you're hearing right now.
Oh no.
Did you have a background in martial arts of any kind? Were you interested in that?
Yeah,
stuff?
Definitely. Like, I did Taekwondo when I was growing up, and like, I've been kind of a closet MMA fan for like a long time.
Do you have any favorites
of fighters?
Yeah.
Gosh. Yeah, there's a fighter who just fought Tyron Woodley. He just fought on Saturday. I didn't get to watch it, but he's really cool.
Nice.
Yeah, I recommend checking it. Some of his
the only people
out.
I remember are like early UFC.
Like who?
Like Dan Severn was
oh,
favorite.
Wow. Yeah, Dan
the
Severn.
The big wrestler guy that just beat everyone up.
Yeah, for sure.
I only know the ones that were wrestlers, like Brock Lesnar or...
Mm-hmm.
I guess Kimbo Slice wasn't a wrestler, but I remember that name.
Definitely, yeah. Kimbo Slice, rest in peace.
Yeah.
No longer with us.
It's
too
shame.
Bad, yeah.
His rage finally caught up to him.
Yeah. He was kind of scary.
Him and Tank Abbott, right?
Tank Abbott, yeah. He was like one of the old breeds for sure. Just like kind of out of shape, but just wanted to fight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like when it started, they were just like brawlers, basically.
Yeah, definitely.
There
now,
was not much craft to it.
Now it's like they're like real athletes and stuff.
Look at like the early surfers and skateboarders and stuff. Now those are like trained athletes.
Yeah.
Like to be a surfer, you have to be in like pretty good shape. Back in the day, it was just like fat dudes on homemade boards, just like doing it.
Having a good time.
Yeah.
And now athletes ruin it as they do for everybody.
Yeah, they'll do that.
Are surfers still like laid back though, or are they all serious?
I think you've got
now?
A couple versions of surfers, but for the most part, most people tell me surfers and like surf culture are like jocks, yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible.
I don't know if they even smoke weed anymore. It takes so much concentration to ride like a 30 foot wave.
But you know they rip fat, nasty vape clouds.
Yeah.
Yes, so I'm sure they do. So you've been able to come out of the closet though as an MMA fan. Now it's like everybody is an MMA fan.
Yeah, I should not be so ashamed of it. It's just like the violence of it. I even question it a lot of the time, like even if it's something I should even be watching. sometimes when it gets very brutal, you know?
From the outside looking in, to me, I just think it's kind of, it's long. Like a really big match can go like a half an hour. Sure. And a lot of them will be like rolling around on the ground and stuff. And I'm just, I just get out, I check out.
That's the big, you have to get hooked at one point, and then like eventually the rolling around the ground becomes less tedious.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that.
It's like anything. Like, I've recently begun to appreciate baseball after a lifetime of it's finding it, you know, excruciatingly boring.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a similarity in that. Or, like, any sport, really, once you get in, like, you start appreciating the nuance to it more, mm-hmm. you know. So.
And once you see it, sure. it becomes very easy to see. Like, you can follow it very clearly once you get that little hook in you.
Right, yeah, totally, totally.
Stoner Control starts as this side project, and now it's the focal point, but you are very much the creative force behind the band.
Yeah, I definitely, like, it started with me, Mike, who's still in the band as the drummer, and then Marley, my sister, and, like, I would basically tell Marley what to play, like, every time I would write the part, just because she didn't really want to have to come up with the part herself. But now we have Sam in the band, who's, like, a really amazing bass player, so it's kind of it's more collaborative than it has been in the past, but it's definitely still like I have final say, I feel like. Right.
Well, that's what I'm curious about, because when we started doing this show, I thought, you know, all bands were kind of working together, and mm-hmm. it was always
and
equal
he thought
parts.
He would have the final say on this podcast.
Yeah. But
until he left for a week and I drove it into the ground.
That's right. I thought this would be collaborative, but it turns out no. Andy's a harsh dictator.
I am. I'm a brutal tyrant.
But no, I think having a singular creative vision is more common than I would have expected. How does that dynamic play out among the three of you? Is there does it ever become contentious, or how does that work?
And if you were Guardians of the Galaxy, who would be who?
Oh, geez. I think I'd be like Groot or something.
Nice.
But I would want to be... Who's, like, the raccoon?
Oh, Rocket?
Yeah, he seems like the most fun.
He does.
I'd probably be whoever's, like, the most uptight, but I want to be the fun one, but then there'd be, like, I'd actually be whoever's, like, the
You'd probably be Drax, who doesn't understand sarcasm and is funnier because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's, like, Batista or whatever that guy. Yeah, he's the wrestler guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it doesn't really get contentious, no. Mike is like the most easygoing guy I think I've ever met in my life. I've never seen him angry. And then Sam's like, he's pretty down just to do whatever. And he's like, however I can be of service type of thinking, which is, it's nice. I like that.
Nice. That makes him the Gamora.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He goes along to get along.
Yeah. It's also the most dangerous woman in the galaxy.
Yeah.
He left that part out.
Yeah.
So when you come with a new song, is it's a hook or a riff or a progression, and then it's built out among the three of you? Or do you bring something pretty whole cloth to the group and say, here's where mm-hmm. we're at?
Yeah, I feel like it can. In the past, it's probably been more fleshed out, you know, like I'd bring like a finished thing. But as of lately, it's been like I have this part or I have a couple parts. Like if you guys have an idea to add or something. Maybe it's just like I'm running out of ideas myself or something, but it's a little more collaborative now, and it's like less finished and more open ended, I'd say.
Was it when it began? Was it did you have this desire to be the singular vision? Was it something that you specifically wanted to do, and you're kind of bringing in ringers to help you realize it? Mm-hmm. Okay, I got you.
Yeah, definitely. Because in the other band I was in before it was like it was a bit more contentious. Where I wanted to like bring in the songs and like let's practice them this way, and it was like they kind of wanted to jam a bit more, so I wanted to have this. I was like, I'll stay in that band and I'll have that, but I'll also have this thing where I can just be like, this is how it's gonna be, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, we gotta listen to a little bit of music, because you guys put out a record end of August
yeah,
31st.
Like, yeah, exactly.
So it's just been a couple weeks, but it's a hot ripper. Tell us a little bit about the process of putting that
together. Is it a hot ripper, Drew?
It's a hot ripper.
That's like really that. Nice of you.
I like that.
It is. It's a hot, quick ripper, too. Like, it's 10, 11 songs, something like that?
It's only nine. It's only nine songs.
Yeah. Yeah, feels like 11 in a good way. That's usually nice. Isn't the case. Like if I said it feels like 25, then you know that I'm really shitting on it. But no, this was it's a hot little ripper.
Yeah, it's a quick listen.
Yeah, but you guys recorded this at Destination Universe.
Yep.
With our friend Victor and friend of the show, Hutch.
Great, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we recorded with them. We did the last one with Hutch, too, at Matt Thompson's. It's Ivy League recording. But this time we did it at Destination Universe, and it was, like, really nice. It was my first time in, like, a real studio kind of thing. So that was really cool.
And like, were there any Nutria around when you recorded?
Yeah, there was a ton of Nutria. I don't know if it's the same Nutria that comes.
It's very generations friendly. Of Nutria on yeah. the property.
Victor and Amanda have some friendly buddies that live in the creek behind them.
For people who don't live around water rats, a Nutria is like a giant guinea pig, mm-hmm. that like a swamp guinea pig.
To me, it looks like a cross between a muskrat and a beaver with orange teeth.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
Oddly orange teeth.
Without the beaver tail. You know, it's got a muskrat yeah. tail. But it's beaver-sized. Yeah.
None of the like industriousness of a beaver either. You know, none of the hard work.
Yeah.
No.
They're not yeah. building anything.
Yeah,
it's like the beaver's lazy cousin.
At least exactly. I don't think they are. Yeah. Not that I'm an expert on Nutria.
And that's why I love them so much.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
they hang out around.
But they're around Destination Universe Studio. Mm-hmm. I'm curious. So with someone like you who's got a very specific take on what you're trying to accomplish, mm-hmm. what is the relationship like when you go into the studio and work with the producer? How open are you to that feedback, and how does that help to evolve the songs?
Yeah, well, when it's someone like Kutch, who's like, the Thermals are one of my favorite bands for sure.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm happy. Whatever like his input is, I'm like, I'll definitely listen. But he's like pretty, he just wants to like take the performance and get like the best performance out of it, you know. That's what he focuses on, I feel like.
For people who don't have any studio experience that are listening, what does that mean? Like, when he is coaching you or he's mm-hmm. trying to coax that performance, what's actually happening there?
Right, so I guess like, say if I'm like singing a song and he's like, he can tell I'm struggling or something, or he's like, oh, he's getting stressed, like he'll like go in and be like, okay, it's going good, like focus up here, or like do it this way as opposed to saying it this way, and it'll be a lot easier.
Gotcha. So helping you through nice. Some jams.
Yeah.
The not screaming in your face with yeah. like blowing a fan.
He's not the mean play producer. Faster. He's more of like the comforting, which is what I would need. I don't need mm-hmm. like the Phil Spector or whatever.
Right. I know when I'm doing a shitty job. I don't need someone
don't have to tell me
to yeah, emphasize definitely. Or underline that.
He does take a pistol and just place it on the mixing board. Mm-hmm. Just yeah. he doesn't say anything. It's just kind of there.
Yeah, he's not like gonna Phil use Spector it. In that way. He yeah. does bring a he gun does do to that. The studio.
He's like Phil Spector in terms of the wall of sound, the pistol, but otherwise he's totally different.
And he's also extremely anti-gun violence, so mm-hmm. it would be yeah. a big deal if he
is growing his hair out to look like Phil Spector, though.
That's a nice look.
Yeah. Well, Charlie, I know you brought some tracks. What's the song you'd like to kick us off with this evening?
Okay, I guess we'll do the Stoner Control song I brought. This one's Local News. It's like, I like this one because I feel like it's like a good mix of all our like sounds. Like, it could have fit on the first EP, or it could have been on the last album, or it could have been on this one, but it's like just kind of all those like coming together. Awesome. I think it's a good progression of where we are.
Excellent. Well, let's check out Local News.
Cool.
Talking heads on free.
I wish that Arsenio Hall had been on the air when Barack Obama was president, so that the real first black president could play some kind of horn on the preeminent African-American talk show of the time.
Oh, man.
Missed opportunity, Arsenio. That would have
been beautiful. Should have came out of retirement for that
one. His show, they should like restart the Arsenio Hall show.
I think he did. Wasn't there a rebirth for a little bit of a window? Maybe, I think maybe America's moved on. Now they're ready to watch Family Feud with Steve Harvey.
Man, he's the best host of all time.
It's so random. Why did he have his own show? Was he like a Jimmy Fallon type or
Arsenio?
Like, yeah. What even channel was his show on?
It was on Fox.
It was on Fox back in the day. When Fox was the bad boy.
Yeah. See, Fox had a little bit of a they were just like a weird network. They were and so they took some more chances. Plus they had their local news was at 10 instead of 11. So we had this like 10:35 hour where they could beat the late night shows. And that's where Arsenio was.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. The last time I watched the Arsenio Hall show that I remember was the night I was staying at my friend Reed Peglow's house, and his mom had made some delicious fettuccine Alfredo, and we stayed up late for like third graders
watched
some Arsenio. Then he fell asleep, and I got food poisoning and puked fettuccine all over from the top bunk of his bunk bed. It was just sort of like dripping
noodles.
Yeah, it was just like
to wake his parents up.
Yeah, it was like when you go into a jungle and water is just dripping from big leaves. It was like that, only it was noodles. It was white. Just
white noodles.
I would say a quarter digested noodles.
Oh, man, that's a scary thing to see come out of somebody's body. White noodles.
And I didn't do anything. I didn't tell anybody. Like, I didn't like wake anybody up. So I just sat in my sick.
What are you supposed to do at that point?
And you're a kid.
When you're a kid, you just roll over and go to bed, and we'll deal with it in the morning. But that's not really what you're supposed to do.
No,
you're supposed to get up and clean it up like a goddamn adult.
Yeah.
No, they were in the morning. His parents weren't upset with me. They're like, "Oh, you should have just told us. We could have, you know."
They were very
understanding.
Don't you know we have a puke kit for just such an occasion? They would have came in with like these suits on and like just the whole room like has like spray nozzles on the wall.
Yeah, they would have rubberized everything, and then there would have been some like sprinklers that kicked in. That's basically what it needed. It needed a full hose.
Children need rubber rooms,
but. It was one of those moments where you realize as a kid you don't know things until you learn them, you know? Like, there was nothing obvious to me about that situation because it was the first time it had happened.
I learned something pretty important this last weekend.
Did you?
I learned I can only do about four dabs.
Four dabs.
And after
four
that,
dabs is a lot,
when you're daisy chaining dabs, four is the limit.
Four was my limit that night. I don't know what the size of these dabs were, but...
Let's say
no, it was two.
A quarter.
It was two dabs, but they were huge. And
were two dabs
before
four dabs worth of power.
I threw up because of weed.
Fuck.
It was the first time it's ever happened in my life. It was the highest I've ever been. And I was, man, it's not fun. Like, you know, when you're puking, your brain's out and you're really drunk.
No.
How fun that is.
No.
This isn't like that. You're totally cognizant of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I was totally aware and in the moment, and it sucked. But also, not that big a deal because I was real high.
Yeah.
It's just like, huh, I'm puking again.
Silent partner Nate also puked that night from dad dabs.
Yeah.
Shit.
Oh, man.
Charlie, do you have any good puking stories that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I guess I do.
I guess you have a favorite.
Yes, I do. So this is back in high school, I guess, I don't know if that's too long ago. But
No. High school is where some of the finest puking
like the
has done.
Pukes.
Yeah.
So it was prom night and I didn't go. Like, it was like, so I went junior prom, I didn't go senior prom, and like we just like hung out and drank at my house, but then we were like gonna go to the party still.
Yeah.
Or like, I don't even know if I like even wanted to go to the party, but my friends did.
Yeah,
that's,
you were
like,
just
that's
like
what I've told myself in hindsight.
You've saved yourself $100 and you're still drinking. So I think you won.
And like we hung out and like watched Training Day and just like drank, and I think we made some like gross like microwave mac and cheese, and this is important because of the vomit.
Yeah.
So anyway, we go to the party and I like I barely make it in. Like, I'm very intoxicated. I shouldn't have been out. And I find a couch and I kind of, you know, when it's like it's going, like I'm
so you find
basically
a couch,
blacked
just
out. And
you're the guy that the party happens around.
Yeah.
There's always someone who's who's lost it.
I thought you meant it's coming out. I thought you meant you were going to puke, so you went to find a couch to do it on.
No, like, I don't think I knew until it was too late. And then I just kind of puked on it. And then like people found me and like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, he wasn't even invited. Like, and they all like gone to prom. They're like in their sweats now. You know, they're like, it's after prom. Like, we're hanging out. And I'm just
and you're a guy who clearly didn't go and puked on their couch.
Yeah, and it was like gross mac and cheese.
Oh, that's amazing. Man. That is wonderful. So
and that microwave mac and cheese is
It was different. I don't even eat that stuff, but
dude,
I did that
easy
time.
Mac. Mm-hmm. Ooh, it's easy.
I once came out of being passed out to find that I was puking. And so I was laying on a couch and I thought, okay, I've gone to bed. I've gotten ahead of the train. I'm here. I'm where I want to be for the rest of the night. I had a blanket. I was ready to be asleep. But then I kind of all of a sudden my eyes are open and it's just happening. And I puked all over our friend Tyler's rug in his basement.
Oh, man.
I did clean that rug. So, Charlie, the name of the album, we didn't share that. It's Alone in the City. Correct. Came out. Awesome, wonderful, and thank you for sharing that track. I read in an interview you did, I think this was you, but is your band favorite band Death Cab for Cutie?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, interesting. Definitely. I was intrigued when I saw that because that seems like a band. I've never heard someone say that as my favorite band, but obviously they're extremely popular.
Yeah.
Can you, and I'm also pretty ignorant of Death Cab for Cutie. I like the song Cath a lot.
Yeah,
very
that's a good one.
Although I was disappointed when it wasn't about inserting a catheter.
Yeah, it still might be.
Yeah, I mean, it's a metaphor, but you get it. What's the pitch for Death Cab for Cutie? Where did that get started, and what do they mean to you in terms of being your favorite band?
Well, they were totally like, I was like 10 when the OC was on, and I had older siblings.
Oh yeah,
and they're like the OC band. I feel like, you know, because that was there was so many indie bands who like kind of were popularized by that show.
Phantom Planet was their theme song.
Totally. Yeah. Well, I guess Phantom Planet might be the one that's more popularized by the OC than Death Cab. But yeah, so like when I was 10, they were like the coolest. They're like, because they were close enough to like pop punk, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I like Green Day, so like I could get behind this. But it was also like, this is cooler. Like I can tell.
It's interesting. They're kind of like that big mature step past Green Day, I think.
Yeah, so that was that for me. And it just kind of, they've stayed my favorite band.
But I thought that was Blink 182 for you.
That's more of a lateral move.
Yeah. No, I don't think that's even a step forward.
Maybe
they're
a half
also
step
great,
back.
But they're just like to the side.
Yeah, do you have an opinion of Blink 182? This is actually kind of a recurring question.
I like them.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
Thumbs up on Blink 182.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you have a favorite song?
I like a lot of their songs. I like the one Wendy's Clear or Wendy Clear or something.
Oh, yeah.
That one's Enema.
Yeah, that's a jam.
I like that one.
My band covered that on Halloween last year.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So when you think, I'm curious about that because I feel like favorite band now is one of those things that's more of a tradition than it is a reflection of maybe who you are.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's your like your gold standard. If someone asks you, what's your favorite band? That's your standard. I get that. How do you feel like that has influenced your music writing and the sounds that you're shooting for?
Well, I don't know if it like comes out that much, but like I learned to play by like playing their songs, you know, and like tried to sing like him, you know, and all that. Like when you're like a little kid, like 13, I was definitely trying to do that. So I just feel like it's always kind of in there, whether it's like the song sound like it or not, you know. But we have this song on the last one called Trendsetter, which was like totally my attempt at doing like an early Death Cab song.
Do you find that when you are trying to emulate someone that you love or a sound that you're after, that you find like your natural place? Like I guess I'm wondering how influence works. So you start out trying to write a song that sounds like Death Cab for Cutie, and obviously it's going to be your own interpretation of it. What is the difference there? What compels you to take something and make it your own versus kind of copying it?
Yeah, I think it's really hard to not just do like, you don't want to be so transparent with your like influences, you know. So I think it maybe just takes time to like find your own thing a little bit, and then it'll just naturally work itself into like what your influences are. I heard this one thing that like Jeff Tweedy from Wilco said, where he was like, that I agreed with, where he's saying you listen to music when you're a musician, you listen to music until it's like you need to participate, where it's like not enough just listening to it, where it's like, oh, I'm so inspired by this, where like now I need to do something.
So the inspiration is not really chasing a sound. It's more just like the compulsion to act.
Oh, for me, definitely.
That is not what I thought you were going to say. I thought you were going to quote the famous Jeff Tweedy quote, "Cheers, cheers, drink more beers." And I always thought that was kind of juvenile. What's up, Jeff Tweedy?
Yeah, I don't know that quote.
Yeah. Cheers, cheers, drink more beers.
Yeah. It's like a weird chorus on Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, which, you know, never gets mentioned when people are really into that album, but
Shit, how did I miss that?
Well, you know, it takes a close listen to purposefully misrepresent somebody. Well, Andy, we should probably listen to a little more Tunage, and you've got something to leave this week, don't you?
I got some stuff.
By the way, you like the use of the word tunage?
I did.
Yeah.
You used it good.
I'm trying it out. Felt good. Had a good mouthfeel.
It does. Yeah. It really fills your jowl.
Yeah. Tunage, if I was British. What are you thinking about this week, Andy?
Oh, man. I'm trying to think about what I should go with first, and I'm going to go local.
Good.
Man.
Nice. Yes.
This is a great band that everyone needs to go check out. They're called Pet Weapon.
Oh yeah,
and they're a two piece. It's a bass. I think it's like a tenor or an alto bass or something. It's like
cool.
And drums. Dylan Riger's on bass and vocals, and our friend Ray plays drums. And Ray is a fucking fantastic drummer. So
yeah, they just put out a record.
They just put out a record with a really dope album cover by a good friend of ours.
Yeah,
named Sarah Crosley,
who local you check tattoo out. Artist. Sarah Crosley works at Oddball Tattoo. If you guys are looking for some ink, she's wonderful. She's fantastic. The album artwork is amazing. I'm glad you're playing this. Yeah, this is hot.
And Ray and Dylan have been playing music for like 20 plus years together in various bands. These guys just have like a really awesome chemistry, and this just has that kind of sludgy kind of Mike Patton meets Surge from System of a Down without any of it coming off as cheesy
or sounding like them. I feel
like
it still also has roots in punk rock too.
Yeah.
Even though those things are kind of at odds.
Yeah, there's some punk rock and then there's some post hardcore, maybe even a little bit of like prog and like the way that they're toxic and stuff. So
it's cool.
Yeah. Check this out. This is off of their new album called What the Fuck's It Called? It's called Brute Mirth Fetish. You can find it on their Bandcamp page and get that shit. This song's called Me in Particular.
Where is it?
Nate were driving to a bar one night, and we drove by this vacant parking lot, and there was a person in a astronaut helmet with a sledgehammer whacking a rubber tire.
That's pretty good.
We drove back by it, and like 10 minutes, they were gone. Like, they'd never been there.
It was an art installation. It was just a pop-up art.
Mm, or a murderer.
That's true. There might have been a corpse in that big rubber tire.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Being pulverized. I know, you don't like to think about it, Charlie, but sometimes, you know, sometimes you've witnessed a murder. I've heard that more people have witnessed a murder than they realize.
Yeah, I bet.
I've heard that, too.
That's a scary thing to think about.
Yeah. I don't love to think about it.
Just, no, it's,
yes, you do.
It is interesting, though.
I think you do love it.
And it's also like maybe you notice something fucked up about the situation, but you're just like, oh, whatever. I'm just going to keep going.
I got to watch this shit. Well, I got to watch this fool die.
What's going on here?
No, that's not my instinct. My instinct is always like to... That there's always something normal going on. My instinct is actually the opposite. That no way what I believe to be happening now could possibly be happening, because I don't think it happens that often.
Sure.
Weird. My parents... My dad in particular is a worrier, and he thinks that I'm going to be like assaulted or like there was one time I was talking to him on the phone while I was driving, which you're not supposed to do in Oregon, but I had it on speakerphone. And but then a guy drove up next to me and he goes, "Hey, hands free, man, hands free."
Oh,
like talking. I was like, "All right, man, I get it. Drive ahead." And I was like, you know, just shut up. I don't want to. Yeah. I know it's hands free.
You just dropped your phone in your lap just started talking at your own crotch.
Thank you, Samaritan.
Like everyone else.
Whatever. And my dad had like lost signal, and he called me right back and goes, "Everything okay? I didn't know. Were you going to get in a fight? Like, was that guy going to?" I was like, "No, he wasn't going to do anything. That guy was going to do nothing.
He saw you talking on your phone, and that's it. He's going to fight you."
That guy was clearly a coward and a rule follower. He wasn't
I don't know,
to do
man.
Anything.
No rule follower. No,
I'm with him.
Doing that.
When I see
hands
some,
free man, shut up.
When I see some fool driving in their car talking on their phone, I want to fight them. Your dad was right. You know, in Indiana, a motherfucker will fight you.
Maybe he's a deeply violent person inside, and maybe his instinct is always to beat someone up who you know lips off to him.
I think he lives in a world of constant Indiana aggression, just corn fueled road rage.
Yeah. And aggro doesn't mean agriculture in Indiana.
He just doesn't understand that out in Portland, we smoke that good green ganja grass, and we keep it real irie.
If he still listens to this show, I think he understands.
I think he would.
Does your dad listen to the show ever?
Occasionally. He thinks it's a little bit... We work a little bit blue for his taste.
Yeah. Sometimes we give him shout-outs, though. What's up, Mr. Lazara? Yeah.
This time.
In Portland, don't worry. When we all get to a four-way stop at the same time, we just get out of our cars and leave them there. We don't even fucking do it. We're just done with those cars.
Those are
part of the intersection.
My dad will be in town in the middle of October. Maybe I'll invite him over for our recording.
Oh, let's have your dad on the show. Oh, my God. I can't wait.
That'd be kind of cool.
He would love to do that. But this is quite a digression. Charlie, I'm curious. Like, if you had to name one band or artist that was underrated, in your opinion...
Okay.
Who would you pick?
I don't know.
I'd like you to try to think of someone that people may have heard of but not paid enough attention to, but I understand if you have to go deep catalog.
No, I don't think. I like a lot of very obvious bands, so.
underrated?
Very obvious bands. I like that.
I just saw Everclear.
Really?
Yeah. I know. That's like not even underrated. It's just that they're like people think they're shitty.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I like a lot of Everclear songs, actually.
Yeah.
I got to say the same thing about Goldfinger.
Oh, yeah.
Go I
see
love
a Goldfinger show, and you'll have so much fun.
Yeah. They're incredible.
They play a lot of songs you know.
Yeah.
From the
definitely.
90s.
That warms my heart to hear you say that, Andy. I love Goldfinger.
I didn't like Goldfinger at all, and an old girlfriend dragged me to their show so she could grab the bass player's dick, and she did.
Oh, no.
It feels like a tube of cookie dough, she says.
Right. Wow. Cool.
And I was like, hey, this is pretty fun. And I got on stage at a Goldfinger show.
Fine.
I got on stage and pretended like I knew the words and half sang along on the mic with the singer at the last song, that song Mabel.
Yeah.
I'd never heard that song in my life. I was up there on stage. It was like the whole crowd had come up on the stage. He just like started bringing people up.
That's crazy because that song had gotten played on the radio when I was in middle school.
I mean, I was familiar with it. I just didn't know the words.
Yeah. No,
and
sure.
All of a sudden... I was like kind of being instructed to kind of sing along on the mic with this crowd of people and I just kind of smiled and put my hands up. This is fun.
You should have said it. You always say, "Let me hear you," you know, Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
When you get that opportunity.
No, I didn't though.
Charlie, I was interested that you used the word obvious bands that you like. That's kind of funny, but it also is a little bit of sort of like you're putting yourself down a little bit.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I just think like Everclear is a band that people would make fun of, and I have a lot of bands I like that, like Death Cab, that people would like. Are not, it's not cool to like, but they're very well known, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, you grew up out here in the Northwest, which mm-hmm. was much, like, there's a deeper culture of cool here than there yeah, is in any of the places definitely. That we grew up in. It's with true. Maybe the exception of Milwaukee. Nate's from the Milwaukee area. It's got a little bit of cool to it, yeah, but it's yeah. a dirty it's, Midwest
it's,
cool.
Not it's like fucking a, like Harley cool.
Yeah,
it's that's a, way cooler than yeah, Portland. Briggs yeah. and Stratton cool.
Yeah,
it's
Northwest cool, Mutual
like,
cool.
Like tough motor people.
Yeah.
But those
yeah.
tough motorers.
Yeah.
That's like the,
it's a different kind of cool. That. But were you growing up, like, were you aware of sort of the hipster rise?
Definitely.
Was that a in the consciousness as you yeah. were?
Or was it the
age?
Opposite? We were like, we don't wear flannel here. That shit's weak. And all of us in the Midwest were like rocking these flannels. And yeah. Like, we're in the Northwest.
I don't know about the fashion aspects, but I remember just like being like thinking it was really cool that so many Portland bands were like really popular at the time when I was getting into my own music and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like Decemberists or like the Shins or the Thermals, you know.
Yeah,
they all were kind of getting popular around the same time, I feel like, so
mm-hmm.
it was like exciting and I was very proud and still am.
What was the impetus for you picking up an instrument for the first time? How did you get started as a musician?
Yeah, like my dad, both my parents were like music fans. They weren't musicians themselves, but they like they encouraged us to play. We took piano, both my sister and I, since we were like 5, and we did it till we were probably like 12 or something. But I always wanted to play guitar. Like, I always wanted to do like the Keith Richards thing. My dad was a big Stones fan.
Yeah.
Kind of like the obvious classic rock stuff, like Beatles, Stones, and Zeppelin, AC/DC.
Like Sublime.
Yeah, Sublime. Well, you know, yeah, I like Sublime rock. Too. But yeah, so that was definitely like classic rock, and then like bands like Green Day and stuff. I was like, that's the coolest shit. Like, I'm into that.
Yeah, so, that is the yeah. coolest shit.
Like Slash is when you're 10 is the coolest thing.
Slash, man, I feel like he's potentially a little bit underrated.
Maybe
because he's kind of a character now. He's sort of like a yeah. caricature of himself, and there have been like Muppets that look like him and stuff like that. So he's kind of he's seen the full cycle of pop culture, but he yeah. was, you know,
he was a real was piece of shit.
I'm sure he was, but he was also yeah. really fucking cool for
no,
like
he
you
was.
Said for kids.
He was kind of the coolest. He made wearing a top hat cool mm-hmm.
yeah.
for a while.
Yeah, he and Alice Cooper.
That's like
yeah.
the dangers of having like one thing like that. Like you're known for having the top hat, like. He has to come out. He better be wearing the top hat
it's
every
true,
show.
Yeah.
People were like, "What the fuck?"
You
was
can never
that?
Cut your hair for Slash.
Yeah, what the fuck? Like he has had the same haircut forever.
Now, when you think of Stoner Control, do you ever? I mean, do you think of how you guys are perceived? Is there an image that you're trying to cultivate as part of this? And
yeah.
do you ever think about those things?
I do. Yeah, I would. I don't know. Not like fashion wise, I guess. Like, because I don't really know much about like how to dress or anything like that.
Hey, you look quite striking.
Thank you.
I know it's an audio medium, but people mm-hmm. just have to take my word for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But so not so much as far as that. But I always like the idea for the band was like I wanted it to be fun. Like I wanted the songs to be kind of fast, and like I wanted people to kind of know us as like not like a too much of a serious band, you know. And it's become more serious. As like it became not a side project, you know,
right?
But I definitely still want that to kind of be the thing that we're known for, what people, the image we have, just not like we don't take ourselves that seriously or something like that.
So like you just kind of articulated sort of loose guidelines for the band.
Mm-hmm.
Do you take that to heart when you're writing a song? Are there things that you mm-hmm. choose or discard because of that kind of rubric you've set for yourself? Is it a guiding principle?
It certainly was for like the start of it. As like I'm only gonna write songs that like could be a Green Day or the Thermals,
or have like some kind of a trapezoid in their like root structure.
Yeah,
but now it's like anything that's satisfying is really all I want. Like I don't want to set any rules really anymore.
Do you ever think of the way you describe your band now? Is there a description that you have for people who have never heard you before that
yeah,
you go
no,
to?
No, I really struggle with that. I never know what to
that's
say.
A hard one.
Like, if when people ask what it sounds like or what genre it is, I usually say alternative rock, and I usually say Nirvana, just because I don't know how much music this person knows, and everyone knows Nirvana, so it's like we kind of sound like them.
It's funny because someone who that is a good way to think about it. You have to assume people's ignorance when it comes to like their depth of musical knowledge.
Yeah, I hate to
do that.
And be like, oh, you probably don't know.
I never do that. I drop it hard on them. It's like retro surf kraut rock.
Yeah.
But yeah, but then you'll hear people who come to your show and they'll say, oh man, you guys sound like Nirvana, even if you're just in the same universe. That
right.
Because you understand that that's all that they have encountered, mm-hmm. and they're sort of heavier.
Yeah, it's like, listening. I don't know how much like...
You're like Nirvana crossed with the Foo Fighters.
I just saw the Foo Fighters last night.
Not last night? No,
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, really? They were at the Moda. Huh.
Right on.
That's one of the best shows I've ever been to. I saw them in Ben Folds 5.
Whoa.
The album Color and the Shape.
That's awesome.
Out. Yeah, it was the best show I've ever seen.
Was there any crazy Dave Grohl antics? Did he pull somebody out of the crowd and have him just shred on stage?
I don't think he did. I left like as the encore was starting. They played mm-hmm. for so fucking long, like I had to go. But
they have a lot of music now.
Yeah, I don't think he did. He was crazy though. He was sprinting all over the place and like yelling, calling us motherfuckers and shit. He's like, "You're gonna dance with me, motherfuckers!"
Nice. Like,
holy shit! Yes.
What's
as an audience member, I like it when I'm referred to as a motherfucker because it really motivates me
yeah.
to like give it on my whole motherfucker.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
People love motherfuckers.
Give it a whole motherfucker.
Motherfuckers love motherfuckers, you know?
It's true. It's yeah. true.
What's one of your favorite go-to stage personas? Like, are you do you have some banter that you fall back on when you're on the mic?
Do you ever call people in the crowd motherfuckers?
No.
Never. I think you should start doing it, but don't do it really excited. Do it like motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Fucking
like
mother
a bitter motherfuckers. That would be more mine.
Just do it that way. Try it. Just try
it. As far as stage presence goes, I don't feel like interacting with the crowd is really worth it until like there's actually a large crowd, you know? It's like like 200 people, okay, then you can start doing like, all right, everyone clap your hands, or like, how's everyone doing? But if there's like 50 people there, or like less a lot of the time, it's not cool, you know?
Right.
They don't want to have to be like, we're doing good, woo!
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I get it. So you keep it lean.
I try and just like, because we only have like half hour most of the time.
Yeah.
It's like, so let's just play the fucking songs. Like, let's not talk that much because...
If you were given the opportunity, because you now have two full albums mm-hmm. of material that you can trot out, so you're having to kind of cultivate that 30 minutes at this point.
Yeah, definitely.
If you were given the opportunity, would you prefer to play longer, or do you like keeping it short and sweet?
I guess a little longer for sure. Like, I think
40 minutes is nice.
Yeah, I really don't like long shows that much. Like, even if it's like a popular band, like
even the Foo Fighters,
yeah, I would have loved if they played 90 minutes.
Yeah, they wore you out.
Yeah, it was like I felt like Dave was like testing my endurance. He's like, I'm gonna last longer than you.
Yeah, and he does it like 180 days.
Yeah, and he does it every fucking day. Yeah, I would probably I think like 70 minutes if you're like,
if people are paying.
Yeah, if people are actually like paying for me, like for sure, I think that's a good length for the headliner, especially with our type of music.
Yeah. Well, let's listen to some more songs. I know you brought a couple more tracks, Charlie. What's the next one you'd like to play for us?
Okay, yeah, let's do... this song's by Alien Boy. I feel like you guys probably...
Yeah, I love those guys.
Yeah, for sure. Like, they're great. I think it's called If We Don't Speak or Don't Speak. And it came out a couple years ago as like a demo kind of thing. And it was like my favorite song. And now their new album came out the same day as ours, actually. And it's like a re-recorded like version of it. And it's just so... hi-fi and like big, and it's kind of a classic song. I feel awesome. Like it could be a classic.
Well, let's check out this classic.
Yeah.
I'm never sure.
What would be the minimum thing that your neighbor would have to do to get you to want to move?
Fuck. The minimum thing?
Yeah. I feel like I've got a pretty high threshold for the...
Does it have to be creepy or...
No, it just has to be a quirk that you're that's a bridge too far for you.
Currently,
it
my could neighbors, be creepy. My neighbors be... burn trash on their window.
Yeah, fuck that.
And that sucks.
It's not great.
That really sucks.
But you're still here.
Yeah, but it's not like move out level.
No.
Yeah. So above burning trash out of your window. I would say maybe just like leaving trash everywhere unburned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's bad too.
But then I've also, you know, I've been a college student living in a relatively nice neighborhood. Sure. I've been a 23-year-old living in a decent neighborhood. In fact, I used to live directly across the street from the Destination Universe.
That's how I got to know Victor. Awesome.
That house has become a shithole by all accounts.
Really?
Yeah, dude. That neighborhood, like, Victor's neighbors are pretty fucking funny. Because his house is really cute, but everything else around it is like...
It used to be me. I used to be a proud resident of that Pirate's Cove.
Mm-hmm. You kept it nice, though, and we had a lot of great times.
That's what I'm saying, but I've also been a bad neighbor many times.
Yeah.
Is that an example?
No, I was a great neighbor then.
Was Victor there then?
What's that?
Was Victor...
Yeah, so I lived there for a year, and then Victor bought that house across the street about a year after I lived there.
Nice, that's awesome.
He replaced a woman who was essentially a shut-in, and she had a lot of cats. And she did ask my then-roommate to take care of one of the cats, and I think he fed it until the bag of food she gave him ran out. So, I think...
Well, that's good.
I think maybe a cat starved.
Yeah.
Or was torn to pieces by the Nutria.
Yeah, Nutrias probably would be mean to cats.
I think they're real chill. I think they probably joined up and like became part of the Nutria family, started swimming in the water, started growing orange teeth for some reason.
Let's just go with that story. Like,
that's,
I want to believe
I guess
that.
A happier story.
Yeah. Catria.
No,
then the cat's starving. It's better than that.
It starved to death in a horrible, slow, and painful way.
It might have starved to death and then a Nutria ate it.
That used to be the neighborhood where there were a couple of big Rottweilers that would get out, I'd say pretty regularly.
Oh, fuck.
A couple stray pit bulls that ran the neighborhood. It was quite a scene back then.
It's a real gauntlet getting to the bus stop.
It sure is. There was a time that a kid was walking back from school down the street and the Rottweilers got out and a van had to stop so that he could drive between this kid and these two like frothing Rottweilers.
Why did that van just open its door and let him get inside of it?
We don't know
where this kid's coming from.
Yeah.
He might be worse than the Rottweiler.
Yeah, yeah.
He might be a Rottweiler.
Let's just say it was a good deed
skin.
And leave it at that.
Because you know those Rottweilers will slip on a human skin.
Charlie, if you could do one other art form or some other kind of expressive art, what would you choose?
Jeez, I'm really bad at like painting or any of that kind of art, you know, like being able to like draw something or something like that. It's weird. Like I'm really bad, laughably bad,
uniquely bad.
And I took art 2 years of it in high school. And it's like most people do art one. And if you aren't good, you don't do art two. But then I did art two and I was still shit. And it was really embarrassing and hard. But yeah, so that I would say.
But you pushed through. That's admirable.
Yeah, I would like to go like see my art teacher again and be like, I'm in a band now. Because she probably did not think that I was an artistic person at all in any way. She probably just thought I was like a pothead or something who didn't give a fuck, which I was. But
yeah, she wasn't wrong.
She wasn't wrong on that front, but potheads can have artistic
certainly.
tendencies.
Come
too.
On.
Yeah. Lay off, art teacher.
Come on, lady. Poor man.
Since you're talking about that, so I feel like you can obviously study an instrument and practice, and you can get better at that. You can take vocal lessons, and you can improve to a point. Mm-hmm. But there is something extra that comes from, you know, improving as a musician. There's something sort of intangible about that. And how have you tracked kind of your progression as an artist?
Are you asking him if being a musician makes him a better person?
No. It does. It does make him a better person. Doing anything creative makes you a better person.
I think that's true. It's like
reading a novel makes you a tiny fractional bit smarter.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's just good
sure.
to do certain things reading. As a human being. They improve you.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering how you
there's a lot of like real shitbag musicians out there.
That's really true. A lot of them lately have. Did you guys hear the thing? Was it the Orwells or the I think it was the Orwells where like something came out where they are like,
well, that's too bad. I kind of like them. I saw them on Letterman.
Well, they just broke up too. So I think
that's why they broke up, because all these allegations came out of like assault and shit like that.
We had a band on once, and the evening that they were coming over to be on the show, they had just heard about something with a partner band, and there was a lot of controversy, and they were in a pretty heavy headspace about that kind of thing.
I don't.
That's a rough place to be. Mm-hmm. It's not a salve. I just think it, like, imagine how shitty those people would be if they didn't have a creative.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. They would be real.
I think I know what you're saying, and I agree, though. Like, it makes you, like, you're working a part of yourself that is, like, trying to improve a little bit, I guess, or something along those lines, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I think you're just trying to tap into something that isn't maybe necessarily exactly about you. Mm. And that's why I'm always interested in how, you know, artists or musicians think about their relationship to their audience, because you are doing something that is to be consumed by someone else.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
And so you do have to you can be an egotistical person. Musicians tend to be.
Yeah.
And you, Charlie, are the egomaniacal head of your own band.
The fucking dictator.
You can understand. But you also have to try to connect to other people. You have to try to reach outside of yourself. Mm-hmm. Is that something you're thinking about a lot when you're crafting a song? Is there a reaction that you're going for or hoping for? And what's your understanding of your audience?
Well, I mean, our audience is pretty small as of now, but what I would like it, you know, going back to, like, I grew up on bands like Death Cab or like Elliot Smith or these artists who were very, like, personal in their songwriting.
And very emotive.
Yeah.
Both of those.
So it's like, that's, if I could like relate to someone the way that music related to me, which was like, you know, the feeling of being able to relate with someone who's having maybe a similar problem or is feeling like a similar way, I think that would be the goal still, is like just having someone maybe relate to the song or like be moved by it in some emotional way.
Do you think that there was anything to do with the age you were when you first heard that music that made you, I guess, for lack of a better word, vulnerable to it?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Like, maybe, like, puberty was just hitting and stuff like that. Sure. So maybe that could have been it.
Is it possible to do that for adults? Do you find that people of your own age or older are more cynical? Is it harder to...
Can adults get real horny for that music?
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, it definitely seems like it's harder to be, like, blown away by a band. I don't know about you guys, but, like, I'm definitely, like, a harder sell, I think, than I was when I was, like, 12 or 13.
I found it harder to become obsessed with a band. That just
definitely
doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
But I feel like my general appreciation for music has broadened as I've gotten older.
Yeah, I guess I agree with that.
It's the depth of my feeling that I think is not as intense.
I consume music on such, like, a large level that I still have that feeling of like joy and excitement when I find a band and like dig through their whole back catalog.
Hell yeah.
But what I find is I don't stick with the band as long as I used to. It used to be that I'd be like, right now I'm only into this band and I only listen to this band. I'm listening to all their stuff. Now it's like, that might be a day or that might be 2 days instead of a year. You know? So there's just more to consume now.
It's weird because I used to love to sing along to my favorite, like, albums, like start to finish, every track I would know every word of it, and now I because of what you're describing, I don't know a lot of words to a lot of songs. Mm-hmm. But I key in on riffs more than I used to, or like musical parts speak to me more than the lyrics did. And I wonder if that's an age thing too, is like, mm-hmm, when you're a kid, you are like very literal. People are always talking to you or at you
for
or
sure
around you, and so someone who feels like they're speaking directly to you, I'm sure you latch onto those lyrics more.
Yeah.
And now it's, as I've gotten older, it's more the feeling that the music evokes.
Agreed.
That I'm searching for.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what I was asking earlier was really more about how you measure your progression as an artist. Are there benchmarks that you use to define success as far as your progression is concerned?
Yeah, I feel like the goal is always the same, just like to be satisfying for myself, you know,
and to finally play the Roseland.
Yeah, I mean, shit, like, we have definitely, I want goals like that, like, being able to achieve playing at some of these venues that I grew up going to, but that would be a measure of success, I guess, but more on
that.
That
would be pretty cool. I was just joking around, but, like, it would be cool as fuck to play the Roseland.
Yeah, any
way
of those
way cooler than being
like
there as
that,
a fan.
Would be cool. But, like, as far as, like, the music itself goes, I'm not trying to be like make something that's like complex or difficult, you know, like I still like feel like I'm not I don't care if the song's simple or anything. Like, I'm not trying to gauge progression like that. But if I can, like, be as concise as possible, maybe. I feel like I'm getting more concise as a songwriter.
Oh, that's good.
That's, you know, always just, like, I want to trim out just, like, the shit that isn't working and just have... It's fine if the song's only, like, 2 minutes. If it's a fucking good 2 minutes, you know?
What are the things about your music that you think you do the best?
I think we're very, I don't know, as far as a band goes, like, we, Mike is different than a lot of drummers in town, where it's like, there's a lot of bands who are doing a similar thing as us, but they all kind of drum the same, I feel like, where it's very, like, meat and potatoes drumming, and it's, like, very powerful, but right. It's, like, pretty simple.
Not a lot of changes.
Yeah, where Mike's, like, through. He's, like, a pretty amazing drummer, and he has, like, a lot of, he'll do, like, technical shit that, like, I feel like most drummers wouldn't do, and I wouldn't even think to, like, tell him to do, because right. I would probably drum it like all the other bands would, or, like, want it to be played that way. And then Sam has, like, this kind of groovy bass style, so when that all comes together, I feel like it's its own thing, more than it could be, like, any other band who's, like, doing guitar pop songs kind of thing.
And now, conversely, when you're, you know, in your darkest moments, what are the things that you are the most self-critical of?
Well, live performances, like, I always feel like we could be more rehearsed, but that's just kind of like, it's so hard to get everyone together and, like, practice enough, you know, when we all have stuff going on.
Especially when most of the practices is just you guys practicing your motherfuckers to the crowd.
Yeah, when I'm yeah. It's more of a banter rehearsal than anything.
I like a good banter rehearsal.
Or I just, like, I don't want to be forgettable. Like, that's what another thing I've learned about, like, playing a bunch of shows. It's like, I would rather see a band who's like, it's like, oh, this is a mess. Then it's just like, oh, this is just, like, fucking, like, so bland. Or it's like, I'd rather be memorable.
There's
some
a memorable
way.
Mess yeah. as opposed to a forgettable polish.
I see so many bands mm-hmm. that it's just like, you guys are good. You know, you're not bad at your instruments and shit like that. But, like, I'm not remembering any of the songs.
It's lifeless, yeah.
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 What do you think is the most memorable thing about a song? Like, do you think, I mean, there's like the science behind it, where there's like the chord progressions that, like, speak to the human brain or something like that. But to you, what makes a song memorable?
It could be anything, but most often it's like the vocal melody. Like, okay. I always, like, I love Oasis.
Yeah.
And I feel like they always, like, just like the goal to have that hook or any part that's like, oh, that was like, I want to listen to that part again and again.
Also, hard to call Oasis underrated because they were the hugest band in the world for a while.
Yeah.
But, like, their later albums get shit on more than they deserve. Because in terms of vocal melody, I think there's some great vocal melody.
Yeah, there's always, like, at least, like, 3 or 4 songs where it's like, oh, that's a great Oasis song. That's they're doing
there's
it.
There's an album called Don't Believe the Truth, I think, that's mm-hmm. pretty late era.
For
it's
sure.
It's full of fucking melodies and hooks. It's really good.
Yeah, that one has, like, that song Lila on it, I think, and that was, like, that's
there you
a,
go.
That's
now we're talking, Charlie. Now we're speaking my language. Yeah. I love Man, that song.
That's one band that I never gave a chance, ever.
Yeah, they're kind of diametrically opposed to your whole ethos, Andy. They're not they're not what you're about.
They don't play reggae.
No.
They never do.
They never do. Never and their once. Name's Oasis. That's the dankest reggae name.
Oasis.
That's true. Shit. Yeah.
It shit, is. I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Oasis should have been a reggae band, and they should have been called something else.
Yeah.
What if, like,
what should they have been called?
What if the Gallagher brothers, like grew out dreads and did, a super heavy dub album?
I'm in.
You're in.
Yeah.
Oasis.
I'm there. Oasis. Yeah, that's great. I think they should be called, I don't know, what's something British?
They were called The Rain, I guess, before they were called Oasis.
Oh, that's super British.
That's like
so Or
British.
Like the Tescos or something like that.
Yeah. All I can think of are stereotypical things that aren't funny.
Petrol. So if they were like a new metal band only in Britain, they'd be Petrol.
Ooh, that's good. I like Kilo.
Oh, yeah, Kilo. Kilo's pretty good.
All but it's got to be something like an Oasis that's British. Like, I don't know.
The Foggy Bottom.
foggy Bottom.
Yeah. That's the Oasis of the UK. Yeah. Speaking of Oasis.
Wet Mark.
Foggy Bottom.
Charlie, I know you brought another track, correct?
I did.
You got one more? I think we got some time. What's the last one you'd like to dial up for us tonight?
Okay, this is Strange Ranger. It's their new song. It's their single right now. It's called New Hair. And It is like that. What it has a great vocal melody, and I think I love the singing always in the Strange Ranger songs, and like I feel like he's always pretty good about the hooks, and this song has a pretty good hook. So
excellent.
Yeah.
Well, let's hook it up with some Strange Ranger.
Let's hook it up.
Like, what was your dream job when you were a kid?
Well, it was definitely rock star.
Rock star. That was the top of the list.
I never really wanted to do much. I think like doctor was also like another thing, but
nobody ever says murderer.
No,
just me.
I was an aspirant murderer.
I wanted to be an assassin.
No, and I love animals too much.
And a comedian.
Yeah, because you have to start with animals.
You have to start with one to fuck them up, and I could never. I could get behind maybe if it was like you went straight to people, but there's always that first step.
Yeah, you've got to graduate to people. Yeah, they don't let you just start killing people.
I always wanted to be like a black ops like super spy who killed bad guys. But it turns out that
That's pretty sick.
That doesn't exist because we just kill everybody the government tells you who to kill. So,
well, that's what a black ops person is.
Yeah, exactly.
You would be killing, you know,
just whoever they told me to.
You know,
and it turns out
Nicaraguan senators or something like that.
I said, government? You don't tell me what to do. Not in the who I'm killing field.
You said you told the
government. That's my business.
Yeah, you can't be like an independent contractor and just like killing your own.
Yeah. Yeah. Choices. Basically, I wanted to grow up and be the Punisher.
You want? Okay.
Did so you want to choose yourself? You didn't want the government to tell you.
Yeah. I was going to take care of that.
Did you want to punish at least bad people? Or
yeah, bad guys.
Just people that had crossed you?
Bad guys. But, if you cross me, probably pretty bad guy.
You're on the list.
you made my bad guy.
Takes a pretty bad guy to cross Andy.
Definitely.
Well, that's good. So you're doing it. I mean, you know, I thought that might. Or,
that's what I always
I mean,
wanted.
You're not a doctor. I don't. Yeah, maybe the ship has sailed on you being a doctor.
Fuck, unfortunately. So, yeah, that's not happening.
You could be a frontier doctor.
What do you mean?
You just take the medicine world into your own hands and just
kind of the Punisher.
What he's saying is you know enough to be a doctor in 1880.
Yeah,
like compared to a doctor in 1880, you actually probably know a lot more.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Or like if we were all like if there was a catastrophic earthquake and we were like, fuck, who wants to be the doctor? You could totally do it.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, because it's fucking me.
I'm a doctor. Yeah. You know, when the apocalypse hits, when you ask somebody
we're all doctors.
If they're a doctor and they say yes, you can be real skeptical on that shit. Like,
yes.
Because I think that's a guaranteed, like, stay alive card. I'm a doctor.
I'm a doctor.
Oh, man, this doctor's a real piece of shit. Every time we say anything, he just cuts off, like, that body part. Like, oh, I'm sick. I don't know what's wrong. And he just cuts my leg off. Like, it was infected.
Amputate.
Yeah. I'm Dr. Amputator.
Doctor is a thing that protects you in the event of the apocalypse.
I think
something that gets called into question almost immediately.
Yeah. You get called on your bullshit pretty quick if you say you're a doctor.
Because there's going to be people who need your
within the next couple of weeks of that announcement, you're going to be called upon to doctor something.
You're going to be on a plane. There's no other doctors.
Is anyone here a doctor? I always raise my hand.
I guess I'm kind of a doctor.
I'm an amateur doctor.
Yeah.
I loved Dr. Quinn.
Yeah. I watch a lot of doctor shows, and I think I could take a run at this tracheotomy.
I'm something of a house head. I'll take a look.
House. He was like kind of a funny.
Yeah.
If I learned anything from House is that most people have lupus.
That's just the ending of the episodes.
It's, like, they it's have the lupus. Most mysterious disease, so they it can fill an hour.
They always check it.
Lupus.
Fuck, it was lupus the whole time.
Yeah. I only watch that good doctor, the autistic doctor.
Oh, nice.
He's the kind of doctor I want to go to.
I haven't watched that.
He feels nothing. No, it's terrible. It's a ridiculous premise, and it's on... Actually, I think it's on ABC.
I can't wait for that crossover with Good Doctor and Young Pope.
Oh, shit, yeah.
It's going to be dope.
I forgot about the Young Pope. Did that take off, or did they cancel it?
I don't know. He looked like a real bad boy.
I know that. I mean, I know that it existed. I know it was Jude Law. Yeah, I don't know Jude the fate Law of the Young Pope. It seems controversial. Or provocative. Yeah, provocative. Fuck. That's the right word. Not controversial. No one cares.
Yeah.
Well, so you get to do, you know... I'm always impressed with people who like knew what they wanted to do when they were very young.
Yeah.
I don't think I had much of a vision of my own future when I was a little bit of little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And rock star is something that you can embrace when you're a kid and you can carry through. You can just like start doing it.
Yeah.
And that's something that I never realized either. Rock stars always felt very separate from me and where I was.
Look at Post Malone. He was just like, I'm going to be famous today.
Well, you just start doing it. That's what the answer is.
Right. Yeah. Hasn't quite taken off like Post has, but...
Yeah, yeah. Well, it turns out I don't know. People talk a lot of shit about Post Malone, but I do like him.
Dude, I was just thinking, like, Post Malone, I finally got it. Like, I heard one song. I was like, okay, I like this a lot. The Psycho one, you know that one?
Uh-huh.
I like that song.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about... this is interesting because we talked about Post Malone. We've talked about wrestling and MMA. And we've talked about our friend Tyler. And he was in a Florida town where Ric Flair's daughter was getting married. And Post Malone was going to be the wedding band. Whoa, this all happened this weekend. He was. They were getting lunch in this Florida panhandle town. And everyone was abuzz because in that town on that weekend, Ric Flair's daughter was getting married. And Post Malone was going to be the wedding band.
Wow,
that's a beautiful
service. What a small world that we live in.
It is.
Who would have known that we'd be talking about all of those things independently and they would come together in such a perfect South Florida vibe.
That's real nice.
Well, Charlie, what is what are your goals for the future? Like where do you see Stoner Control going? Where would you like it to go? What's the progression of the band from your point of view from here?
I would love to start kind of gaining some like venue progression. Like I'm getting a little bored of like playing the same places. Like I'd like to start maybe playing a bit more of like the legit venues in town. Not that the places we're playing aren't legit, but like Duck Fur would be a goal. Yeah. Or like places like that, just as like an opening band would be cool. So that's something I definitely want to try to do in like the next year, 6 months type of thing, and then do some touring eventually.
Yeah.
Once we can like all just like plan work accordingly. You know what I mean?
It's interesting you talk about that venue progression because, again, maybe this is something that non-musicians don't understand as well. Obviously, the Doug Fur is a beautiful venue. A lot of great bands play there. How do you make a plan to get to play there? Like, how do you put something like that into motion specifically? If that's your goal, how do you get
there? Yeah, so...
I heard if you just email them over and over and over, they have to let you play there eventually.
Yeah, that hadn't worked. That didn't work for me. I definitely had emailed them before, but for this album, we've gotten like some real write ups and shit. Like we had a press person, so that's kind of why it took so long to come out because we finished it in like February and it didn't come out till like now. So we were just kind of getting like press figured out. So having like those write ups have actually helped a lot. Like the Doug Fur did respond to me when I emailed them last, and I was like,
right.
And I was like, well, we got a KEXP write-up, which, I mean, it doesn't really mean much. We didn't really get more listeners out of it, but they were like, oh, cool, I know what that is.
I read that KEXP lineup, and I'm a write-up, and I'm a big fan of KEXP, but there was a typo in the title of your 90s had an apostrophe. It doesn't have an
apostrophe. Isn't that annoying? Like, I've noticed a lot of typos in the write-ups we get. It's like, proofread it. It's only like 300 words. Like, it's not that long.
Especially in the banner headline.
It's in the fucking headline. You missed it.
Yeah. So again,
and they out. That's not the only typo. Which they misspelled our drummer's last name.
Well, I'm a professional editor. That's what my job is. And so, KEXP, if you're listening,
yeah,
I'll catch those. Happy to help you out for a nominal fee.
And I'm here to say, ooh, Drew caught you slipping, KEXP. Better get back to the kitchen or the break room. Take a break, KEXP. Or Drew's going to call you out.
What was the experience like working with a press person, and how do you like what influence do you have over what they're doing, and how has that been a boost to you guys?
Well, it's been a really good experience. I really liked the guy who did press for us, Chris Hanat, I think is how you say his last name. It might be a silent H, but I don't know. But it's been really good. Like, he gave us a pretty decent deal from what I've heard, and like he did really good work for us. Like, the KEXP thing is nuts, you know.
That is awesome.
Like, I never would have expected something like that.
Yeah, that's great.
But it is kind of like another, it kind of disillusioned me a bit. Like, getting on those blogs, like, requires, like, another person. Like, if I were to email them, they would never, like, look at my email, you know? So it's just, like, if you have the money to do it, you can get on there, which doesn't really seem right, you know?
It's interesting that there is a layer of person that's kind of squeezed themselves in between people and the art, you know? There's these buffers and these barriers to entry that are very specific because there's some money to be made there. That's very interesting.
That's why we need to get this podcast.
Yeah, I would love. I'm inviting people who want to be that buffer for us to get us a KEXP write-up because, you know, I'm catching errors, you know. I feel like we're slinging it over here, but
that's what they want.
But it is nice that you have, you know, that's a progression that marks a step where definitely. You have that opportunity.
And like, he reached out to us, which was really, we had like multiple people reach out to us, which was kind of crazy. And I was very skeptical of it at first. I thought it was like a scam, you know. Like, I don't know you, but the more I talk to like people, it seems like, I don't know, it's pretty standard for bands who are like putting a. If you're like a band who's on Stereo Gum, you probably have a press person, like
publicist,
most likely,
or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. Every time I get any email these days, I feel like it's a scam. Even if it's someone, a name that I recognize, I'm like, and when Andy has emailed me, it has been a scam. It's been often full of large porn gifts, and I've opened them accidentally in my office.
That's my scam. Hey, here's this cool link to this Bandcamp page, and like four like check slow butt penetration gifts.
He went out of his way to say safe for work.
Yeah.
And no, not at all.
So it's not it. What's the acronym?
NSFW. This was just SFW. I got hook, line, and sinker by
like,
Andy.
Okay, good.
It's funny. This is a true story. He didn't say it was safe for work, but he said it was not safe at the very end of the title, and I didn't fully see it. And I used to have a stand-up desk in my office and sort of an open plan, and I opened this email, and they were like full screen some... some raunchy penetration close-ups.
Holy, that's so gutsy of you. You're like, I don't even care. I'm going to send it to him. Yeah.
It's more common than gutsy, but it was gutsy of me to open anything that Andy sent me. But luckily, a number of people were at work, and I caught it quick enough to minimize
the damage. So
no one noticed.
And you finished quickly before anyone else noticed.
Yeah. I did that thing where like you look at a bright light and then close your eyes and you can see it. I just stared at it real quick and make sure it was burned into my retina.
Yeah.
Then I took care of it. Well, Charlie, that's not the way I wanted to go out, but that's the way we're going to go out with pornography, as
that's
we often
how this one
do.
Ends.
But I just want to thank you so much for being on the show tonight and sharing some great tunes with us. Again, the album is Alone in the City, came out in August. You can get it all over the place. What's the best way to follow where you guys are playing and what's on the horizon for your band?
Yeah, so I would say either Facebook or Instagram. I'd say Instagram is the thing I post on the most, and that's just like @stoner_control.
@stoner_control.
Yeah, and we have a show at the White Eagle on September 18th. I don't know if this will be up by then or not, but
we might miss this one. But
yeah, then October 18th at the Cannon Club is the next show.
Awesome.
And also, thank you so much for having me on.
It's been
great.
So October 18th at the Kenton Club, what a perfect place to see you guys. I feel like that's the venue that's tailor-made
for
where
sure.
You are.
Like, I'm really excited to play there. I never have, but
oh, it's a blast.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good show. Aria's actually setting that one up, so it'll be It'll be cool.
Awesome. Yeah, and if you guys are out there, like Charlie said, there's a lot of attention around this new album. There's a lot of great material out there. Stoner Control Band, if you just Google that, there's all kinds of interviews and there's all kinds of write-ups.
Oh, awesome.
There was one that I found that I want to call people out, people's attention to, that broke down song by song. It was kind of feedback for you guys, track by track.
Right. Real Weird is on the Hustler website. You have to search Boner Control.
Oh, jeez.
Don't do that, actually.
No.
I can't recommend it.
But no, take the time, check out Stoner Control. It's a great band, and there's a lot of good stuff out there. So thanks again.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate it so much.
Boner Control is a sex robot virus for your computer.
You can check that out.
Don't search
pretty
that.
Cool.
Andy's had a pretty bad case of Boner Control many times. He's ruined some laptops.
Yeah,
but in addition to thanking Charlie, I want to thank all of you for listening to this episode. We appreciate you sticking with us week after week, and we hope you had a good time tonight. If you did, we hope you share this with a friend. The best way to do that with friends and strangers alike
is to by playing our show on your phone really loud when you're in the same room as them.
Imposing it on people, on strangers in public is one way.
That's
but
the
you
best
can
way.
Also clandestinely log into iTunes, subscribe to the show, and leave us a comment and a rating, because
like a real
it does
perv.
Pump us up.
Yeah, hell yeah.
You can also reach out to Andy, Nate, and I directly via email at hotgarbagepodcast@gmail.com. That's HAUTE. garbagepodcast@gmail. We will literally say anything you want us to if you email it to us. I promise.
We won't say anything.
Literally anything. That's an Andy Fix promise.
Oh, God.
Speaking of Andy Fix promises, I know that you promised to take us out on the right note, Andy. What you got today?
Oh, man, we need some hip-hop in this show.
Yeah, we do.
And we're going to go all the way to Virginia, specifically Prince George, Virginia. This is the rapper. This guy is not just a rapper. This guy is a rapper, an actor, and a model.
Oh, is it Denzel Washington?
He's a very attractive man. And his name is Cool Hand True.
Ooh.
That's T-R-E-W. And it's all one word.
Oh.
He also goes by just True sometimes.
Like my name, but with a T.
Yeah. 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 He just recently put out an album called World's Fault. And this is his first solo release in a number of years. He does all kinds of stuff. He's been in some rock bands. He's played in this band called Kid Is Qual for a while. And they're definitely not hip hop.
Hmm.
But man, this dude is really good. If the features on his album say anything, he's got features from Camp Low, Wordsworth, production by Ski Beats, who you might know from the Dead President song by Jay-Z.
Yeah.
One of my favorite Jay-Z beats ever.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah, yeah. But this is a song off of that new album, World's Fault, called Silver Gray. And this song was, my brain just stopped. Okay. This song is on his new album called World's Fault. And he's also the CEO of his own record label. Called Clocked Out Records, and this is on that.
Excellent. So
check out all that and get this new album.
Can't wait to check it out. Well, for Charlie of Stoner Control, for Nate, for Andy, this is Drew. We will see you next week on Hot Garbage.
Sipping on this Hennessy, my pride is keeping me from sleep. My eyes is wide open because I'm tired and I need to eat. Wishing my worries would never stick around. So I wallow in my trouble, wept the hollows now. Tears of a clown, that's what Smokey used to say. I understand it how I walk into my workplace. Look closer, see them brothers with the headphones in the grave. Cloud over their heads, walking straight lines every day. Laughed at by the dope boys in the black Escalade. Cause they thinking we so stupid, true, you're carrying this weight that's been sitting on your chest. And your boss don't even say he appreciates your work. But me and Eric need to stay. Cause everybody left, and yo, I know you need to pay. But all your bills that's overdue with your car and Sally Mae. And my woman wanted to play so many games, and I'm stressed. Dude's younger than me, having heart attacks and left. God, if you're listening, I'm needing every breath. Cause my dreams is disappearing, I don't know how much. I'm blessed. Blood, sweat, and tears on these ears that's so deaf. Wait for me to fail, so they say I knew it. Yes, I'm a mess. How much can I last living for the weekends? I'm geeking, I need to laugh. Need a Pampria right here with me fast. I'm spinning and slipping and whipping out control fast. I gotta get this cash, put my past all behind me. She's always in my ear with the beard and reminds me how the other two before I had the shiny things I can't afford. Why my woman so grimy? Does anybody know just where I'm coming from? Maybe this job and girl ain't the one. Breath, relax, need to have some fun. Before I close my eyes and it's all done.